Our Friday guest today, probably Britain's best known businesswoman, Karen Brady, began her career as an 18-year-old selling advertising space. By the age of just 23, she was running a football club, which she then sold for an incredible £82 million. Many of you will know her from Lord Sugar. She's one of his aides on The Apprentice. I've been talking to Karen and began by asking her if she's enjoying her role in the show.
I'm loving The Apprentice. I think the series is perhaps one of the most interesting because the people are so varied. We have a wrestler, an architect, a fruit and veg salesman, and a number of other people in between. So the tasks are great, actually, as well. They're cranking up in terms of complexity because the prize is so big now, £250,000 in investment with Alan. It's an exciting series.
It's a scary time for anyone to start a new business, because we're like sheep, human beings, aren't we? The majority of us are, and we like to follow the masses. And this is a time when people are scared.
Yeah, in times of recession, people become more risk adverse, except real entrepreneurs who actually in a recession see great opportunity. And it is, you know, there are certain businesses that are thriving and doing well, and there are certain opportunities that are out there that come along because people, you know, people need investment. So it's a good time to invest.
What drives you, Karen?
Well, when I was writing my book, I wanted to go right back to the beginning and understand what drives people. And part of that process was trying to understand what drove me. And I realised that it was the desire to be independent, the desire to make my own decisions, to never have to ask anybody for anything, to be able to stand on my own two feet. And that came because I was in boarding school from an early age. And when you're in boarding school, nothing is your own. You don't have your own bed, your own pillow, your own hanger. Someone tells you when to get up, when to go to bed, what to eat, what time you can have a bath. And I kind of thought to myself, you know what? I want to live my own life. I want to make my own decisions and I won't be told. The only thing I knew is that to be able to do that, you needed to have finance. I didn't know where I'd get it, but that's kind of what I knew.
I even find it intriguing your views on boarding school. Do you think they're unfair on children?
No, I don't think they're unfair. And in fact, you know, one of the things that I look back on in my life and understand is that having a good education, getting the best you can out of your education is very important. I mean, you can't get back the years to 16 or 18 ever again. And therefore, you might as well make the most of it. And I'm constantly telling that to my daughter, who's doing her GCSEs at the moment. I didn't think boarding school was unfair. And in fact, my years between 16 and 18 were perhaps amongst the best years I ever had at a boarding school. But it was this lack of control over your own life that made me realise that I'm not going to be ever asking anyone for 10 quid to buy a lipstick or money for a coat. That was never going to be me. But I was going to say what I was going to spend my money on, and it was going to be my decision.
But building a business is great when it works, and it is a complete trap and a noose around your neck when it doesn't work. Like, there are both extremes possible for anybody now that might be inspired by you to start a business. It might be the worst decision. It might be the death of them. It might be their destruction. That's the entrepreneurial risk, right?
Well, that's right. But if you don't try, you'll never know. And I find in life that you often always regret the things you don't do. You hardly ever regret the things you do.
I hear this all the time, but what about, Karen, if you don't try, you'll never fail? Be happy with your lot.
Well, I think that it's whatever you're comfortable with. If risks can be valued in various different ways. You know, remortgaging your house and starting a business from scratch is a big risk, but it can pay off. But equally a risk is being in a job you don't like and getting a job you do like, or being in a job and going for promotion. Those things are risks. And it's about how much you want them. What do you want the outcome to be? I mean, I always say to my kids and people that I meet that, you know, a career lasts a lifetime. If you can get one that you really love, it really makes a difference to the quality of your life.
Can I give you the context of my question? It is that I often say now on radio programmes, how on earth did so many of us lose so much money on property? And what actually happened over recent years is that lots and lots of us were being told, ah, for goodness sake, take a risk with property. Look at the money you can buy. You can't lose. And it was that sentiment of you can't lose which got people into crazy situations. It was insane. It was never going to work.
Well, that's not a philosophy that I believe in, because you can lose money on property, because it's not property per se, it's location that's important in terms of whether you can win or lose money. And I think very often that having the worst place on the best street is much better than having the best place on the worst street. And I think it's about the risks that you take and you calculate them and thinking what's the worst that can happen. And I think if you can calculate your risk on the basis of the worst that can happen, it really does assess how much desire you have to take that risk. And if the risk is you might lose your house, you might, you know, be homeless, then that's probably a risk too far for people.
What happens, Karen, when you're as driven, as ambitious as you, and you're then told... It was in 2006, you've got a brain aneurysm. What happens to your drive and your soul?
Well, I broke it down into five stages, all of which were quite logical but equally important for me, and it was the way I dealt with it. The first was to accept I had it, and there was nothing I could do about it.
How did you first know what happened?
Pardon?
How did you discover it? What happened?
Well, I have never been ill. I've never had a day sick in my life. I've never had a cold. I can't even remember, probably 25 years ago I had a cold. I'm not a sick person, but one day I woke up and I was completely swollen. I'd obviously had an allergic reaction to something. And I was rushed to A&E and I was kept in, and it really bothered me. It was obviously dealt with very quickly, but it bothered me because I travel a lot. I'm in hotels and I can't afford to be allergic to anything. One of those people that carries around their own sandwiches that has to know the ingredients of everything. I thought, oh, I can't be dealing with that. So someone recommended a place called Preventicom, which was offered a full health check. And I thought, oh, I'll go and do that and see if I can get to the bottom of what's wrong with me. And I left, and the following day, the lovely doctor there is an amazing man. He phoned me and he said, Karen, look, I'm sorry to have to tell you, but you have a brain aneurysm. And I said, oh, right. I mean, I didn't even know what it meant. I said, oh, right, okay. He said, look, would you like us to book you in with a specialist? And I said, yeah, okay. And he said, look, when can you go? And I said, oh, it's 3 weeks' time. I've got a gap. And he said, oh, can you go tomorrow? And I said, tomorrow? I said, I'm not going to die by tomorrow, am I? And he said, Karen, I hate to tell you, but this is a very serious situation.
Could you have died?
Yeah. I mean, if it had ruptured, I wouldn't have survived. It was too big. The neck of it was 8 millimetres, which is large. And as I said, for me, I just had to, I broke it down. The first was accepting I had it. I had it and I had no choice but to have it dealt with. It wasn't anything other than just a straightforward, simple, you know, you have to have this dealt with. And then I don't know anybody like me who's never been in the medical world before, when you realize you've got to have an operation, there's so many different choices of which one you have and how you have it and where you have it. So the second point was choosing what I was going to do. I had it. I had to choose how I was going to deal with it. The third thing was having the operation. And the fourth thing was recovering from that operation, which meant a long time in intensive care and in hospital. And then the fifth thing, actually, and the most important thing, was getting on with the rest of my life and putting it behind me. And you know, I tell you something funny. I've so moved on with my life that the other day I was in Solihull Town Centre and a woman came running up to me and she said, oh, my daughter's got a brain aneurysm. And I said, oh my God, I'm so sorry to hear that. And I thought, why? You know, I wondered to myself why she was telling me. And then I realized, oh yeah, I had one. So, I think that sometimes these things can scare you senseless.
And when you are in that position though, Karen, and you come up with a massive hurdle in your life and a life-threatening situation, to some people what it does is it makes them evaluate for the first time in their lives how they have been living their life. Now, at that stage, when you were faced with the prospect of, my goodness, is this close to the end now? Were you happy with how you'd lived your life? Did you change anything after you got through it?
I think that's a really interesting thought, because it did made me understand that when people have a brush with death, or however you want to describe it, it's a fairly dramatic way, why people do change their lives, why people give up their jobs, go around the world, get a divorce, you know, follow their hearts, follow their dreams, whatever.
What because, did you change?
Well, I tell you what it made me realise, that life is very, very short and life is very precious. And, you know, it made me realise that I actually love my life. I love my family and I love my work and I want to do it for as long as possible. And I think the things that it made me change is that, for example, my best friend was born in Hong Kong, and every year she'd say to me, oh, come to Hong Kong. And I say, oh, yeah, next year, next year. And I've been saying it for 20 years. And I suddenly thought, you know what, next year might never come. So I'm going to go. And I took more holidays, spent time enjoying my life and reassess the things that are important to me. Things like doing The Apprentice is not something I probably would have thought of before. But actually having a varied life, doing things interesting, experiencing different things, not only makes you interested, but I think it helps make you interesting.
What do you still want to achieve? What are your dreams in life?
Well, for me...
because you've got all the money now. So what else is there to achieve?
Yeah, I'll be honest with you, I've never been ever been driven by money, ever. I've been driven by a desire to have this independence and have control over my own life and my own destiny. And I think that the one thing for me that drives me on still to this day is this title, sort of first woman of football. You know, it does mean that someone held a door open for me. And my job, I think, quite seriously and honestly, is to hold that door open for as long as possible to allow many as women as possible to come through it. And I definitely practice what I preach. I mean, when I sold Birmingham, 75% of my senior management team at director level were women. And at West Ham, when I went there in 2010, there were no senior women there at all. Now 50% of the senior management team are women.
Final question, Karen, because I know you have to go. In terms of football, do you think there needs to be a radical rethink in terms of the finances, how much players are paid? Is it an unsustainable model?
I don't think so. I believe in free market, and I believe I don't believe in salary caps, and I don't believe in wage caps. I passionately believe that if you have made your money through chicken farming or oil, then you should spend it how you want. But perhaps you shouldn't ever be allowed to put that in as debt. Perhaps you put it in as equity, and that will make a difference.
Lovely to talk to you, Karen. Thank you very much. You've enjoyed it today. Thank you.